93% of African-American voters, 71% of Latino voters, 73% of Asian voters, and 55% of women voters chose Barack Obama as their president on Tuesday, handing him re-election to a second term. After a first term of intransigent opposition from the Republican Party and policies that disappointed many on the left, the electorate selected the president over an increasingly reactionary opposition party and a candidate whose fluid stances on issues alienated many. Significantly, Mitt Romney lost despite getting 59% of the white vote, indicating the weakening of that demographic's voting power amidst a more multiracial voting public. Conservative New York Times writer Thomas Friedman in his column yesterday attributed the GOP's loss to their shift to the radical right. He said the Republican Party today needs to have a real heart-to-heart with itself. The GOP has lost two presidential elections in a row because it forced its candidate to run so far to the loony right to get through the primaries dominated by its ultra-conservative base that he could not get close enough back to the center to carry the national election. A majority of women voters picked Obama, suggesting that women's issues may also play into the future Republican strategizing. Although all this may indicate a possible opening for Obama's policies over the next 4 years and a potential softening of his rival's obstructionism, the Republican Party and its pundits have indicated they will continue to fight Obama on key issues. Obama will immediately have to negotiate what has been called the fiscal cliff, $600 billion of spending cuts and tax increases that will be put into place at the end of 2012. Many believe these austerity measures will cripple an already staggering U.S. economy. House Speaker John Boehner, who Obama will have to negotiate with, did not indicate any softening of the Republican opposition right after election night. On Wednesday, he reasserted the Republican position of remaining firm against tax increases on the wealthy. However, in a press briefing yesterday, Boehner did concede that he would be open to a broad deal that included revenue sources. Joining me on the phone now are two of Uprising's election analysts. Roberto Lovato is a writer whose work has appeared in the Associated Press, The Nation magazine, New America Media, Los Angeles Times, and other outlets. And Eric Mann is a longtime local activist in Los Angeles, host of Voices from the Frontline, and author of the book Playbook for Progressives. Welcome back to the program, Roberto and Eric.
Thanks, Valerie.
Thanks so much for joining us. Roberto, let me start with you. Let's take a look first with both of you at the changing demographics, particularly among the voting public. I mentioned some numbers that were pretty dramatic. 93% of our African-American voters, 71% of Latino voters, 73% of Asian voters voting for Obama, 59% of white voters voting for Mitt Romney. Roberto Lovato, in your mind, why is this significant? And is it really a surprise given where the politics, at least in terms of lip service, Democrats versus Republicans lie?
Well, for me, the big takeaway demographically from all this was actually previewed as early as 1994 for some of us there in L.A. and other parts of California with Proposition 187. I mean, part of what our talking points and things we were saying back then when we did those big marches was that this would come, you know, the demographic chickens would come home to roost with Republicans and their support for this. And this is part of what we're seeing in that, is that, you know, the storied rise of the Latino voter, for example, is finally starting to show some reality to it. But I would caution, however, that by and large, people showed up in fewer numbers in 2008. Like, African Americans stayed the same, 13% of the electorate. Whites went down by about 1.5 to 2 percentage points from 74%. The one that actually went up was Latinos, which is, 9% of the votes were Latinos versus 7.43 in the national election in 2008. So you have these changing demographics. It's too early to figure out what exactly it means for democracy in the country, because the big winner this week wasn't actually Barack Obama, but corporate power, because both he and Romney, by and large, agree on some very core principles of neoliberal domestic and foreign economic and military policy, which are the core kind of columns of domination and empire. And when it comes to domination and empire, really, and this is the last thing I'll say, is, you know, the main difference is, like, you could see, if you look at George Bush, who, you know, proved that it's better for movement building to have an angry white guy fronting for evil policies than to have a racially ambiguous, a morally ambiguous non-white guy fronting for the same evil policies, which means that what just happened, in essence, was a, you know, a cosmetic change in empire.
Eric Mann, staying on the issue of these changing demographics, a lot of the discussion in the media has been, what can Republicans do to soften their tone, to become more palatable to voters of color, to women? But it seems as though that's kind of a bizarre question, given that Republicans did everything they could to alienate these demographics.
Well, yeah, and building on Roberto's point, I mean, the question now is, if we have a black president who got 93% of the black vote and who got 75% of the Latino vote, he is still, right now, the question turns to, what are we going to do? Because the black president is going to keep 2.4 million people in prison and never promise not to. He's deported 1.2 million Latinos. So the question now is really, I think, the fight between the Latino working class, the black working class, the black left, with a black president, because Roberto and I disagreed on whether or not it would be, quote, better, whether Obama won or not, but we both agree that he's a pro-imperialist president. So now the question is, here's the challenge. When a republic is in, the reason it looks like the movement is doing better is because the Democrats are willing to go through some motions against the George Bush, but the trade unions, the Democratic, the Villaraigosas of the world, will never take on an Obama because they share his policies. So now the question is, since I believe it's good to have a black president, this is the challenge now, is will the black and Latino working class aggressively take on the president to say, we want open borders, we want amnesty, we want 2 million people out of prisons, we do not want a strike on Iran. Now we move from demographics to politics.
Well, Roberto, in his victory speech, President Obama made several references to immigration, to immigrants, in what seemed to be a pretty overt reaching out, particularly to people who are of immigrant background. Do you think that this may mean that in these next 4 years, we might see the president actually make some headway in a sincere way on the issue of immigration, that he might actually give up this tough on immigration enforcement position that he took as a way to compromise with Republicans, which obviously didn't work in the last 4 years, toward a more progressive approach and maybe just a more responsiveness to the huge numbers of Latinos that voted for him?
Well, before anything, my analysis is that the radical repressive policies, the 1 million deportations, the terrorizing of immigrant children that happened every day before, during, and since the election has less to do with elections and more with reasons of state. And you're seeing this around the world. You know, so Obama's doing what a lot of other national leaders in the time of the crisis of the nation state are doing, right? They're preparing for the fact that there's probably going to be like a billion people uprooted because of climate change. And so they're instituting the repressive apparatus that is greeting immigrants as we speak. So that said, I really don't think what Obama's going to do depends entirely on Obama anymore. I think we proved that when many of us went contrary to criticisms from many people within the quote-unquote progressive movement to challenge President Obama, first exposing that he'd been the worst president on immigration in U.S. history as far as deportations and terrorizing children and others, and then going and opening that space and showing that, and then going with what some of us call the down payment strategy, which was, okay, you don't have anything to show for yourself, so fix this thing with the Dreamers and stop ESCOM, which is what groups like there in Los Angeles, Endelon and others around the country, Dream activist groups, have been pushing. So it's going to depend on us, as Eric said, from below to, you know, kind of cool off from this re-enchantment with Obama and the Democrats that came at a price of about $6 billion the most expensive election ever, mostly paid for by rich billionaires and corporations, to put the champagne aside and really aggressively go at what I still believe could be probably one of the most dangerous presidents in our lives. If you look at, for example, Sandy and climate change and all the smiles and goodwill that we have in the silence around climate change that destroyed, you know, a big part of the East Coast.
Annette, that's a really important point. And Eric, let me turn to you on that issue. As Roberto said, there was just literally climate silence, even though both candidates in this election agreed that human beings, that the planet is warming. Romney took a bizarre position claiming that there was no scientific consensus. But at least Obama, when he was asked about it very occasionally, although he rarely volunteered it, was a proponent of science that climate change is causing disruptions on the planet. In the next 4 years, given what happened with Hurricane Sandy, and given that Americans are more open now more than ever to addressing the issue of climate change, do you feel at all optimistic about action on this issue?
Well, I think you know, Sonali and Roberto, that I, as an organizer, I wake up every morning from the point of view of, frankly, a very small movement in this country that is desperately fighting for traction. There are people for 50 years who have been trying to build a movement on climate, and I think we have to admit that President Obama will not be an ally, but will be an opponent or an enemy. The fact that Bloomberg Businessweek puts on the front cover, "It's climate change, stupid," means that the establishment, even the business establishment, is not to the left of, but more clear about this crisis, but they're going to move to a green co-optation. The president is just not going to be an ally on climate. And let me see if I can explain this. There's this amazing wishful thinking, like, you know, in 1905, people wanted the czar to stop them. They marched on the czar, hoping that the czar would protect them from the landlords, not knowing that the czar was in charge of the landlords, and they killed everybody. All this thing about Obama should, Obama must, Obama, this is hallucinatory. I believed in voting for him. We can get into that debate. But look, Boehner knows what he wants. Bush knows what he wants. Reagan knew what he wanted. And the sad thing is, so does Obama. So the concept that Obama is the prisoner of a Boehner, Obama needs to get a backbone, Obama, it's now your chance to fight, this is what he wants. He wants to drill. He does not want to stand up for climate change. He doesn't care about immigrants. He doesn't care. He's a cynical, cruel man with a cynical, cruel policy. Now, all this hallucination about Obama, it's time to say, okay, for those of us like me who thought it was important to elect him, good. But I must admit, in terms of the Kool-Aid, 4 years ago, I actually thought the man was my friend. That's pretty embarrassing, but just to go into a therapy group. But I have no illusions now. The question is, Sonali, yes, there's going to have to be a movement on climate, but the Obama administration is going to be the main target, not the main ally.
And he did make a very brief mention of climate change in his victory speech. I want to quote for you, Roberto and Eric, an interesting essay written by artist Anish Shivani, a letter to Obama called "What Progressives Expect from Obama." He says, "Dear President Obama, you would have lost the election but for your progressive base. For the second time in a row, we saved you. You gained traction in the long campaign only when you changed your tone to appeal to progressives. The first time you secured a large electoral victory, you wasted it by turning against your own base, acting as if you'd never need us again. We came to your help a second time because we realized the much greater threat from Mitt Romney, who would have set the clock back much more than would have been tolerable. Now that we, minorities, immigrants, Latinos, gays, women, the educated, the young, the unionized, have handed you this second big victory in a row, what will you do with it? Will you squander it like the last time?" Roberto, is this a question that is exactly the kind of question that is worth asking, or should we not even bother asking it? And like Eric said, we need to just focus on building these movements and not really even expect much from Obama.
I think in this post-election period, Eric and I agree on a lot of things, most things. I think that I'm not a progressive. I don't call myself a progressive. I really think we need to change the imaginary of the left, because progressivism, I don't even know what that means. I mean, the laundry list that the writer laid out is really kind of an ideal laundry list, like Eric was talking about. It does it really exist? I'm not sure. We didn't deliver the election to Obama. $6 billion delivered the election to Obama, including 2.5 for the presidential election. So that said, I think, you know, we all have to have skin in the game and be engaged in the election. Like it or not, people, black people, brown people, you know, different working class people have an investment in these elections, which increasingly take on more the role of political theater to legitimate an increasingly illegitimate system that's literally killing the planet. So, and it's falling apart at the seams. You know, as I mentioned earlier, the nation state structure restructures. It's not falling, it's not dying, but it is restructuring, and its legitimacy becomes increasingly questionable, not just in the U.S., but around the world. Elections become theater to get people's political energy and even the insurgent energy. And I think that ultimately was the function of Barack Obama, was to take the insurgent energy that was rising with the crisis reflected in Bush and then channeling it back towards the illegitimate system so that, you know, people, rather than do what Eric and I are proposing, which is, you know, we are in the fight of our lives around climate change. It's not a matter of if things are going to get terribly bad, it's how terribly bad they're going to be now. If you talk to folks at 350.org, other, you know, and NASA scientists and stuff, Hansen and others. So we are in the crisis, in the fight of our lives. It's a multiple crisis of epic proportions on economic, political, climate, and questions of legitimacy. We're in the fight of our lives. If we allow ourselves just to fall asleep before the lullaby of Barack Obama, we get what we deserve.
Well, final thoughts to you, Eric. And on the issue of climate change, of course, I should mention there's a massive snowstorm that has slammed the Northeast again, even after, you know, just barely weeks after Superstorm Sandy. And our friends, families, allies, fellow Americans in that part of the country are experiencing the front lines of climate change in a really big way. Final thoughts, Eric Mann, reflecting on these next 4 years, on Obama's win and what we can expect.
Well, I think one thing is important is that sometimes when we talk about movement building, we either say the Democrats are worthless and write them off, or we have what we call special whining, which is what that wish list of the other guy sounded like. The issue is, can we force any Democrat to stand up to a Democratic president? Because that's part of what a social movement has to do. On climate, if you stand up and say you want, like, we're going to try to develop a real moratorium in Los Angeles on the auto, and we're trying to figure out how to build a movement to radically, radically restrict auto use in Los Angeles, can we expect Garcetti or Wendy Gould, let's get concrete, to work with the strategy center, the bus riders union, to ban the auto in large parts of Los Angeles and have auto-free days, auto-free rush hours, auto-free freeways? That's not hallucinatory. That's real. At that moment, every Democrat is going to say, I can't do it because I owe it to the construction unions. I can't do it because the business climate won't like it. I can't do it because the president will not give me any federal funds. During the war in Vietnam, I worked with Senator Greening from Alaska. I worked with Wayne Morse. I mean, I was just a kid. But we had Democrats who had the guts to stand up to Lyndon Johnson and say, I will not vote for that war in Vietnam. And when two members of the Senate stood up, and they suffered hell on the part of the Johnson administration. If we can find, the problem is that the liberals are gutless right now. I want to work with Democrats, but the reality is they're bought and sold. So the dilemma is, on one hand, we have to build a movement, but we do have to pry away certain Democrats on the issue of climate to stand with the movement and be willing to lose their election, which is a lot less problem than losing the planet.
Well, Eric Mann, Roberto Lovato, it's always a pleasure to have the two of you on, and I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much. It's a great conversation.
Eric Mann, longtime local activist in L.A., host of Voices from the Frontline, heard here on KPFK, author of Playbook for Progressives. Roberto Lovato, a writer whose work has appeared in the Associated Press, The Nation magazine, New America Media, Los Angeles Times, and other outlets. Both Roberto and Eric are part of Uprising's team of 2012 election analysts.